Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Sarah Reynolds.
I'm Tiffany Fikes.
I'm Seychelle Van Poole.
And I'm Wendy Papazan. Today we're going to talk about something very near and dear to my heart, which is 9 things you need to know before hiring your first assistant. Do you guys remember back in those days when you hired that first person, how nerve-wracking it was?
Yeah.
When I hired my first, it wasn't nerve-wracking because I just hired my daughter's friend. My friend's daughter.
I was like, you have a daughter?
I was like, wait, what? Okay.
I'm the one without a daughter. I'm the only one on this podcast without a daughter. Okay.
Breaking news.
Right. I hired my friend's daughter because I just needed help. You know, so it wasn't stressful until that became stressful. And then I needed to hire correctly. So
I think a lot of people do that. I don't think you're alone in that process. I think a lot of people do it that way to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. You just hire someone that's near and dear to you.
Yeah.
I had the benefit of joining my mom, who had already hired her first assistant in 2001, who he was with her for 5 years. And so I learned this from her, and it still didn't make my first hire less nerve-wracking. So I totally get the nerves, because when you're actually making the hire the first time, it's so nerve-wracking.
Sarah, you and I are so parallel sometimes, because Barb, when I joined my mom, hired her first assistant in 2001 also. And then when I joined her, that's interesting.
Crazy.
Yeah. And she's still with us. She's a MAPS coach now for Keller Williams, which is amazing, and still on our team. But like, it's just, it's amazing. Yeah. Like,
that's amazing.
Of course they hired at the same time.
I feel so cool. I was so brave hiring, because I hired someone right away. Yeah. It was so brave, but also so nerve-wracking at the same time. You know, here I was, brand new agent. I hadn't even been an agent for a year. I wasn't even really making that money. I just knew I needed some help. And hired someone for about 20 hours a week.
You were so clear, Wendy, on like how you wanted to show up as a mom while working. I feel like that probably pushed you to find leverage faster, because you weren't, at least as a friend looking in, like you weren't willing to sacrifice how you wanted to show up as a mom. And so that forced you to put leverage faster, which I so love that you did that. Like, I really admire that about you.
I have questions for you, Wendy. Because that is fascinating. Like, right when you get started hiring someone to help you, was it more of like you just viewed it as this is what you're supposed to do, or at the time, or what led you to actually do that right away? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I had been a stay-at-home mom for 5 years, and I liked a lot of aspects about that, which was like picking my kids up from school at 3 in the afternoon and, just cooking for my family and things like that. And so I, and then Jay really, you know, he encouraged me to do it. And the other thing we had agreed even before I started was, hey, you know what, let's not ramp up our spending as you make more money. So I had like a level playing field in that I could take that money and really invest it back into being a realtor. And and plus it just made total sense to me. I don't know, because hiring that contract to close person at $350 a pop just seemed like such a good deal. I could just get rid of all that stuff. So I never even wanted to learn it. I was like, I don't want to learn how to do this. It seems,
I think I only did one deal myself, because I hired that, my friend's daughter. Daughter. Am I saying it right? My friend's daughter, 3 months in. So I had done 3 deals.
Wow.
And when I hired her part-time.
That's amazing.
Same reason. I just, well, and I'm a model follower. So Sarah, to your question, like, well, they say that's what you do. So, okay, then I'm going to do that. So even if it's scary, I know I can go make enough money to pay for that. And I don't want to do that work. I want to focus on the other stuff. So yeah, I hired mine 3 months in after 3 deals.
That's amazing.
Do y'all ever hear?
Can we also pause? Hold on. Say that again, Tiffany.
Yeah.
3 months in after 3 deals.
After 3 deals. I know. I was like,
the average agent helps less than 3 families a year, and you did that in your first 3 months. Like, just pause for a moment. Like, That's
amazing.
Awesome.
That's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it set a set an unrealistic standard in my mind for what everyone should do. But I definitely, but I give that all that credit to, like, I just followed the model. Like, yeah. To me, I just did what they said, and I didn't realize nobody else did that. Like, I didn't realize that people did not just do what
I was
the MREA says. So,
yeah.
Love it.
Well, so today, guys, we're going to talk about the 9 things you need to know before hiring your first assistant. Or it could be your second assistant if the first one didn't work out. So just 9 things you need to know before hiring. You want to kick us off, Sarah?
Sure. Okay. So the first thing is to know yourself. This is critical. So I think the stat is it's 1 in 94 millionth of a chance that someone has the same top 5 strengths as you in the same order, meaning that each of us are created very unique. And so we want to know ourselves. Like, so the needs that we have, the needs that Sarah has, are going to be different than the needs of Tiffany, Seychelle, and Wendy, right? And so the first step is to know yourself. So there's a few resources that, you know, we really lean into on the podcast for that. The first is something called a KPA, or any sort of assessment that sort of assesses your behavior. A very popular one is also like the DISC assessment, right? So are you more of a driver? Are you more inspiring? Are you more of a steady leader? Are you more conscientious? Meaning, are details something that is you're strong in? So know yourself, right? Asking yourself some questions, like, so taking some time when you sit down to like have this sort of conversation with yourself, you want to ask yourself some questions and maybe do some journaling. So the first thing is just write out, like, what are you good at? What are the things you're good at? So like Tiffany, for example, would be like, I'm good at being a rock star and selling a house a month right when I start.
Well, or check, I'm check, good at following check. Models, right?
Yes.
She's good at following models. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Which would mean an assistant for Tiffany needs to understand the importance of models, right? And care about that, right?
And systems.
Because she's good at that. Exactly. Like, are people, sales, what type of action do you take, right? And then really, the best assistant is going to really cover your blind spots. So really powerful question is, you know, what are you bad at, right? What are some things that you need help in? And a lot of times, if you're a rainmaker driver, which many of our listeners, I know you guys are, right? You struggle with systems, details, routine, right? So then you're wanting to look for an assistant that is those things. So you want to know yourself. One thing, and I would love to hear from you guys about how to do this in more like tactically, but one of the things I relied on is actually asking other people as well. So journal. And then asking someone else. I just started this speech coach. So I lose my voice after speaking a lot during the week. And we speak for a living at the Empire Building Podcast. You know, all the money we make from the podcast.
Right. From the podcast, of course. Yeah. All that revenue.
Yes. Okay.
Year after year.
Yes. So it's important that I not lose my voice, right? Because I'm teaching a lot and things. And so I had to do this assessment that they asked me to do. And it one of the questions was, what do you do when you get nervous before speaking? And when I read it, I was like, nothing. Like, I'm good, is my thought. So I asked my key people, and they were like, you start speaking faster. You sway. Like, they knew exactly the things that I do. Yeah. But it took me asking someone else. So asking your spouse, asking your partner, asking your friends, like, what do you think I'm good at? What do you think I struggle in? Would be really some key things to do to really know yourself. That's step number one.
I love that.
And I would also say you get to add to that the things that you just don't like to do. So
yes.
Yeah.
True.
Because you can be good at something that you do not get joy from. And so, yeah, that would be the third question. What do I enjoy doing?
So
to cross-reference with what am I good at?
Ooh, so I like that. I like that a lot. Well, and really that third question that Tiffany just referenced really is number 2 on our list, which is we want you to create a not-to-do list. And so I keep mine on my phone. I know each of you all have done this as well. But wherever you keep it, whether it's I know Wendy at one point had it on post-it notes on the side of her computer. Now it's in her 411. But anytime you're doing something and you don't have help for this thing yet, anytime you're doing something that maybe you don't like doing, number one, or maybe you don't have time to do it, or maybe you're just like, no, this doesn't bring me joy, or I'm not good at it, or this takes energy from me, we want you to write this down. And there's no judgment around it. Like, don't be in judgment of what it is. Like, literally this morning, I was like, oh, Rolando, our yard guy showed up. He is the best because I don't like doing the yard, right? That I like planting, like, herbs, but I don't like doing the yard every week, right? That's on the not-to-do list, right? It could also be like doing checklists to submit for my contracts. That can be on the list, just the same as making meals or grocery shopping or like answering phone calls. Like it can be anything, right? It's whatever that does not give you energy that you are doing on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis is going to go on this list. And the other thing I want you to think about too is if it goes on this list, if someone could do it better, like you may be creating the marketing for your company and it might bring you joy, but you actually might not be great at it. Someone might be a lot better at it than you. So it's okay too to top grade yourself as far as what you're not doing. And so what you're going to do is you're going to take this list, and this not-to-do list is going to become the start of the job description for your first assistant. Because everything on this list is what you're going to start looking for in the people that you hire. And so for me, like, I am not a high detail person. I am heavy relationship based, want to be out with people. So I knew my blind spot, as Sarah mentioned it, needed to be somebody that's really good with systems, checklists, and detail, because they needed to cover for something that I am not naturally really good at.
I love that, Seychelle. And what's great about that is then you look for the kind of person who wants to wake up every day and enjoys doing what's on your not-to-do list, right?
So and they exist. They actually exist out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all think like everybody's like us. It's just a human nature thing that we all think everybody is like us. And so you make this list and you're like, nobody would want to do this. And then you find that person who literally is like, oh my gosh, I would love nothing more than to create spreadsheets all day long. Yes, give me that job. And it's really rewarding, and it's a good reminder about humans. Like, we're all different. And so your not to do is somebody's dream job.
So good.
Yeah. I love that.
So on this not-to-do list, sometimes your help may start at home. So often we think like, oh, we can afford, quote unquote, leverage in the business, but not at home. And your not-to-do list can create really, it's things that need to be done at home just as much as in the office. So on your list for your first assistant may be creating all the spreadsheets. It also may be, you know, taking your kids to school in the morning, or, you know, whatever those things are for your assistant. Or your first hire may not be in your business at all. It may be somebody at home. I know that I've had a housekeeper for a long, long time. And when we started our architecture and then it all went down the tanks when the economy exploded in 2008, like, the last person who we stopped paying was the housekeeper, because like that was my first hire and it was going to be the last person that I couldn't pay anymore. Like, we stopped eating out, we stopped spending money in anything, and I still had my housekeeper until we just couldn't have it anymore. And then as soon as we ramped back up the business, that was the first hire I brought back. Like, she came back as soon as I could afford to do that. So, you know, it may be a housekeeper, it may be lawn care. You know, what are those things at home that you can get your time back immediately by hiring somebody else to do it?
I want to just double down on this for a moment, especially, I mean, how we started the podcast. We started talking about, you know, Tiffany's love for models, and I think we have that in common as co-hosts. And so I view models as like the Bible, in terms of like, you must follow it. And for me, I didn't get some leverage at home. Like I didn't give myself permission because it wasn't built into the model.
Yeah.
Because if you study, like, no matter what business you're in, right? But if you study different businesses in the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book, which Tiffany referenced earlier on the podcast, there's an economic model, right? That shows how much you should be spending on certain things. Well, it's not taking into account really a female empire builder that has young kids.
Yeah.
Right? That needs someone to help cook Monday through Friday or, you know, and one of the biggest things that happened in my life was really actually when we launched this podcast. We were on stage 4 years ago with Gary Keller and I started talking about that and he just said, it's supposed to be a guide. Like it's meant to actually help you live your best life. It's not meant to take away from your best life. And so if you're seeing that you need help at home, that will then reflect the growth of your business. We give you permission today to do that, whether it's in a model or not. Lean into
it. And I think some of us just have a hard time with that concept because, you know, as women, we are sort of taught that we do need to do it all. We need to have a full-time job. And then all the studies show that women typically do more work at home than men. That's just the way our society is set up. And we just feel like that's what we have to do. And you get to choose. And what's interesting is you can actually create opportunity for people in your home world, just like you can in your business world. I think sometimes we are ashamed of not being able to like clean our house or things like that, but you can actually create opportunity. So, you know, I've had an amazing housekeeper, Betty, for over 10 years, and I've helped her acquire 3 rental properties in her home country. And
amazing, and
you can do that with other people as well, right? So you're actually creating opportunity for people at home, just like you are creating opportunity for people in your work world.
Well, and the people that you hire to work in your home, you can be creative too. Like I know one of the things we always did with babysitters is we had a standing date night. We had a babysitter who came. It was a high school kid in the neighborhood. She came every Thursday night and she watched the kids. And then when the kids went down, she addressed envelopes for us in the real estate business. You know,
sounds like you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm like, if I'm paying you to be here, do address these while you watch television, girl.
She was like, no, he's for you. Snacks. No, just kidding. More work.
Yeah. Yeah. But look for overlaps like that. You know, your assistant can do multiple things. Your babysitter can, when your kids are down, can address envelopes. It's not hard. So just be creative in solving all the things that you need at home as well. What's y'all's favorite, like buying your time back at home?
Well, this is later on, but 2 years ago when we had a heart-to-heart with Olivia's teacher, and it was a parent-teacher conference, and the teacher goes, so what is it like in your household with Olivia's homework? And I was like, what do you mean? What is it like? And she's like, who's helping her? And we were like, oh, no one. And she goes, so second grade is too young for self-study. It was so funny. We were both like, oh, like we're supposed to be helping her with homework. And so my favorite hire is actually we have a tutor that comes to the house that does the kids' homework. And I don't have to stress about it. And neither does my husband because it doesn't make us the best people, to be honest. And so that's my favorite.
Yeah,
home hire.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. Well, and then you don't have to be the bad guy. You know,
exactly.
You don't have to be the bad guy there. Yeah.
Our, I mean, our biggest hack for sure is like the housekeeper. Like that was something we started out with it too. Before we could afford it weekly, we did it every other week. And it would be the deep clean things that would help us with that so that I wasn't like on, you know, and in real estate, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, it can be a crazy schedule, especially when you're in those growth years of entrepreneurship, that cleaning the toilets just like doesn't hit the top of the list. Like, you know, you want it to be clean. So for us, as quick as we could afford it, it was housekeeping every other week before we could move it to every week. And it was, I mean, it stayed that way probably for 10 years before we moved it to weekly.
Asher
actually, his favorite life hack is also the cleaner. He comes home the day that the house cleaner comes and he opens the door and he never remembers when it is, but he opens the door and he's like, And he pauses and he takes this deep breath and he's like, this is the best day of my life, Mom, because it smells clean and all the surfaces are clean. And like, he just loves it.
It's magical. It is. Awesome. Yeah, we used to call it Happy Sally Day.
He's your little neat freak.
He is definitely my neat freak.
Yeah, that's so sweet. Well, I think the weirdest help we ever got was I, for some reason, had it in my head that Jay really wanted a fish tank. And so I was at an appointment with the seller, and they were giving away a fish tank. I was like, perfect. I'm going to surprise Jay with this gift. And so we ended up getting the fish tank at home and all this kind of stuff. And then he ended up, because I thought it was his thing. So he ended up cleaning it. And it's, you know, we had little kids, and like, that's the last thing you want to do is like clean a fish tank. No. So much work. And so it would take him forever, you know, because he likes to be precise and, you know, he's not going to do a halfway job. And so you have to like drain a lot of the water out, put the fish somewhere safe, scrub the whole thing. And all the rocks are so gross too. And then finally he was like, God, I hate this thing. And I was like, really?
I thought you loved it. He's like, you gave me a job.
He's like, no, I hate it. I'm like, oh, okay, good to know. And so then I Googled it and we got a fish tank cleaner. And this guy came in once a month. He's got the power equipment. He's like, you know, it's like, cleans it up in half a minute. It looks way better, you know, than when Jay did it. Takes a fraction of the time, a quarter of the time. And so many tasks are like that. It's like mowing your lawn. It's like painting. Everybody can paint, right? Mm-hmm. But professionals are always going to do it faster and better with you know, more precision than you. So it's just it was inexpensive. It's like $35
or something. That's the thing. You can find somebody to do any of this. You just got to look for it.
Yeah. Love that. All right. Well, number four, your first hire may be at home, but your first work hire is probably going to be administrative help. So, and what I mean by that is someone who's going to help you with your systems, pull your systems together, because all of you that are business owners, you have systems. You may not have them documented, but if you're going to grow, the number one thing that you need to do is you need to document your systems, because your clients they don't necessarily want you. They want repeatable results. They want your standards. And the way that you grow is that you document your standards, you document your systems, and the kind of person that's going to do that is going to be someone with an operational mindset. And honestly, even if you have somewhat of an operational mindset, which I know some of you do, which is great, the way that you're going to be able to grow is you need to focus on sales. You really do. You're going to be the one to focus on sales. And I know for some people, you know, they feel like, gosh, I need to get my systems in order before I hire my first assistant. And the reality is you're probably not going to get them in order. If you haven't done it by now, and you know who I'm talking to, I'm talking to you right now. If you're listening to this and you think I'm talking to you, I am talking to you. You're not going to get your stuff together. So you need to hire someone. And the first thing that they're going to do is they're going to help you get your systems together. I can remember when I hired my first full-time assistant. Before that, it had been like sort of like contract people. And I said to her, I said, listen, you're now our HR department. You have 2 weeks to figure out how to get paid. That was our first system. Yeah, we got to create a system for paying people. And she did it. The right person's going to do that for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a key. And I will say on in terms of like profitability and things like that, like this is something that we highly recommend, meaning like a lot of people want to hire like more salespeople because they're like them and they're fun, right? Yep. And I've seen business after business after business go under or basically no longer exist because they didn't have those systems in place that Wendy was talking about. And then their salespeople almost demanded it because they need help. That's why they're with you, right? They're not with you just to have fun. They're with you to help grow their business and income as well. And so you really want to lean in to hiring that first admin. And a lot of times it's someone completely opposite than you. And so it's not someone you're going to sit around and have fun with necessarily, but they're going to create your ability to do the things that you like to do and that you're best at. And from a profitability standpoint, you will always get the highest return when you hire that admin first. And so follow that.
Yes.
Okay. Number five, what to look for, Okay. You can hire someone part-time, right? You want to hire someone resourceful, right? Especially that first person. So one of the books that had a really big impact on me is, I'm blanking on it, which is so funny. It has such a big impact. I can't remember the name.
No, it happens to all of us.
The Hard Things About Hard Things. Anyways, he talks about the difference between a builder and someone that is really good at coming into an already established systems and things like that. You're looking for that builder, right, as your first assistant. So someone that can figure stuff out, right? Someone that you can take, you have 2 weeks mm-hmm. to figure out how you get paid, and they go and figure it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so someone that is resourceful, right? You want to hire someone that will grow with you. So one of the biggest mistakes that we see people make when they hire that first admin is that they're hiring someone that is, they view as almost lower level, whereas you actually are hiring your future COO.
Yeah.
And so you want to look, okay, is
that
person—
Say that again.
That's huge, yeah.
You're hiring your future COO, meaning that do they want to grow? Do they want to learn? Do they want to constantly be looking at their personal development and growing with you? Versus you don't want to hire someone that's just like cul-de-sac, meaning that they won't take you very far. You want to hire mm-hmm. someone that wants to grow with you, right? So hire someone who has already done the job, right? If they've already been an administrative assistant, that's awesome because they have that background, right? Some things that you can ask yourself is, what's the downside of this person and can I live with it? So when you're going through that hiring process, you know, what's the downside of that person?
Sarah, that's so good.
Yeah.
And one mistake I see a lot is somebody will think they need to hire a salesperson first, and maybe that salesperson doesn't work out and they just make them their admin. Yeah. And I see that happen all the time where they're like, I thought I needed to hire an agent first and then they didn't work. So I just turned them into my assistant. And it's like, no. Those are two totally different humans, who's going to succeed in one is going to be a disaster in the other and vice versa. So like, don't mistake yourself if someone's failing in one role that all of a sudden they're going to be perfect in a different role. Like, you need to re-recruit or rehire them for a different role if indeed that's what you're going to do.
Yes. And we go into more detail on all of this in our hiring series. We can put the episodes in the show notes. It's been a few years now. But if you want to really learn exactly what Say is saying, you want to listen to those episodes. The biggest thing, and I've learned this recently the hard way. The biggest thing is, are they a values match? Like, do they match your values? When someone becomes your assistant, they actually are an extension of you, which means that if their values do not match, it will show up and it will actually mm-hmm. be a bigger reflection on your values as a human than actually mm-hmm. their values. And so are they a values match, right? And then really, I love this one. But a question you want to ask while you're interviewing and when you're looking for someone, do you like them? You're going to spend a lot of time with them. So do you like them? And so you want to like them.
I had somebody who was phenomenal at the job, but I hid from her. I didn't do it on purpose, but I realized I would make up reasons not to be in the office or to avoid her. And she was lovely. I mean, she was fine, but we just didn't jive well. And so I realized, okay, the perfect match for the job is important, but you gotta like them because you're gonna be with them more than your family sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably, so mm-hmm. probably almost, almost every day. Yeah.
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 Almost every day.
When, so we good. were all of all of us were recording an episode not long ago, and we were talking about too, like when you are interviewing, and I'm about to walk you through like a little like high level overview of the hiring process. Don't be on your absolute best behavior, because they also have to live with your weird side of yourself. Yes. And you're like, you're like, you're funky and like your weird habits and like your quirks. And so like, if you show up perfect and then like day one on the job, you show up as you, you know, it's kind of like that second and third date. They're like, wait, what just walked in the door? So like, show up as authentically yourself in this process, because that's you want them to like be attracted to working for that, not the perfect version of you.
I just had something funny come into my head. So we all have a good friend. Her name is Ryan Major. She's has a big personality.
Yes,
she's got an amazing brand. And so I'm just imagining her trying to do that as she's hiring someone, and then, you know, pretending she's very quiet and sort of introverted. And then that first day, you know, it's like, hey.
She lobs a glitter bomb at you.
I was going to say, exactly. Just explodes in the office.
Yeah, everywhere. That would be surprising.
She's going to be like, get a broom. Get the broom. Clean the glitter.
Shout out to all of our weird empire building podcast listeners.
So seriously, we love you. We love our Empire Circle. One of the things that today I'm actually interviewing for my executive assistant, and I was supposed to be at the office recording this, and the interview is in 23 minutes, 33 minutes, sorry. And my assistant right now said, you're supposed to be doing this interview when you made the decision to do it at home. And I said, well, call her and tell her she needs to come to my house. And I was like, we'll check her adaptability. And so that's the exact, like, cause that can happen. You can change your schedule. Your schedule can be one thing and it can change. So don't hide those things is what Seychelle's saying. Don't hide yourself. Like show everything, right? Cause they have to live with it and want to live with it. Right?
Yeah. So. Well, I think like we all as a board are hiring for her best life right now. And that was a question we asked when we were on our board meeting yesterday, is like, which of these candidates would you really want to hang out with and spend a lot of time with? Like, does that change your answer for these candidates? And I mean, thankfully we have this amazing candidate pool that, I mean, it's going to be really hard to pick from. But what a gift, you know, that everyone was like, no, I love all of these. I would love spending time with each of them. So definitely build that in. So if we take a look at the hiring process, I'm going to give you a couple of episodes to go back and look at if you really want to dig into this. But there's also, we'll give you the high level too. So a couple episodes to take a look at are episodes 13 and 15 for us, which is the 8-step hiring process that will save you millions. And then there's two others, which is episode 11 is Say No to Say Yes. And episode 53 is Hiring Starts at Home. So I'm going to put these in the show notes for you. I got your back. If you're driving, do not pull, like, don't wreck your car and write those down. It's in the show notes. But I just wanted you to know that that's in there. When you're hiring, what you do is you take a step. So like, in this case, step one could be like you write your job description, you review the resumes, you do phone interviews, and then you play red light, green light. You review your notes and say like, which of these really resonates with me? Which of these made the job easier? Which of these were highly adaptable, as Sarah was saying, and willing to adapt to schedule changes and different things, right? And then you go to the next step, but you don't take every single candidate through the whole process. So then the next step could be like personality assessment and questions and motivational interviews and things like that. And then you're going to red light, green light again. And Sarah had a note for us too here.
Yeah, well, it's been a while, Seychelle, since you pulled a Seychelle. A Seychelle is when she starts really talking about the thing, but then not saying what the thing is. And so let me tell you, what Seychelle's going over is step 6. Which is we highly recommend you follow a hiring process. And so step 6 for hiring your first assistant is to follow a hiring process. And we outline all of that for you in episodes 13 through 15.
13, 14, and 15. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Sarah. Because we talk about process, I skipped the process and skipped the number for you. So if that tells anyone who's really good at the process and not, I think there's our hint right there for hiring. you know, but it's really important in this actual process, follow a process, to create a system around it, to follow a system. Number one, because for HR, it's really helpful in covering yourself, but it's also great because it takes the guesswork out of it and it allows some objectivity, because it's very easy when you're hiring to fall in love with people. or to project what you want them to be on them. So when instead you follow a process, it kind of saves you from yourself in that journey with that candidate. And, you know, we're not going to dive into the entire process today. Go and listen to some of those episodes, 13 through 15, 11 or 53, from the show notes. And I think that will help you a lot in your journey when you're establishing your hiring process for you and for what you want it to look like.
I love that. And then at the culmination of that, number 7 is you want to have at least 2 candidates at the final. Really, you want to have at least 2 people that you could be equally comfortable with. This is not one person you want to hire and then one person that you really wouldn't want to hire. This is 2 people at the very least that you would want to hire. So what that looks like is you're probably going to start with over 100 resumes.
At least.
100, at least.
Yeah.
Oof, at least 100 resumes. Okay. And from there, you're going to want to do at least, you know, for instance, I just hired my executive assistant. I started with about 100 resumes. I did 15 quick phone interviews. Actually, it was on Zoom. So 15 minute interviews, just like a phone screening. And then from there, I really took 10 candidates through that personality assessment. So whether you're doing the DISC, if you're with Keller Williams, it's the KPA, you might give them StrengthFinders, whatever that looks like is you're doing that next level. And then out of those 10, you really want to have minimum of 2, ideally 3 final candidates. And why is that? Can anybody tell me why you want 3?
Well, first of all, not all of them work out.
Totally. Like meaning not you, all of them you work might, out. No, yeah. You're not pizza. They're not all going to go for you. Yeah.
Or tacos.
Yeah. If you're from Austin. Yeah. Or they might go back to their current position and say, hey, I got a job offer. And their current position might say, you know what? I'm going to double your salary.
We've had that happen before. Mm-hmm. We've absolutely had that happen.
That's very likely. So if you've got one candidate that you love and one candidate that's just okay, then you're stuck with the just okay candidate. Okay, what's another reason? What could happen? It could be that you haven't been clear about the salary requirements, right?
Right.
So you got 3 candidates, okay? And you go to make the job offer to them and they're like, "Well, you know what? That's really," or they might say, "Listen, I need a lot more benefits than that. I can't do it." So there might
or
be
Or they
some
might
kind
be
of,
they might be getting down to 2 jobs too. Like you have no idea what's happening on their side of things. So
or they get hired in the middle of
in
the process.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. In the middle of we've the process. Yeah.
All of these things that we've had happen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why you really want to have minimum of 2, 3 would be better at the end.
And I will say too, the importance of taking like those final 2 to 3 candidates all the way through the references process too, is you learn so much in the references. We've had several times we've gotten candidates all the way down to the final step of references and something wonky comes up in the reference process we weren't expecting and we thought we had it nailed and it totally switched which direction we went. So that's a huge piece of it too.
Huge. Okay, number 8. Okay, once you make the hire, you want to set them up for success. Okay, this is honestly, all of the steps are critical. This is so critical to actually their success and your success, right? I think a lot of times, you know, we hire someone and then we're like, oh, thank goodness I don't have to do that job anymore. And then like you're out, right? And you're not going to have them fulfilling the job very long if you don't set them up for success, right? So you want to time block training with them and you want to be with them almost every day in the beginning. Right? So time block part of your day to spend time with them. This allows for you to really get to know them on a deeper level. They get to know you on a deeper level and then really sets expectations, right? One of the things that Brené Brown talks about in Dare to Lead is the importance of a leader painting done. And one of the best ways that we can paint done is actually work alongside them in the beginning. And because of that, if you actually do a good job working alongside them, a lot of times your business actually takes a little bit of a dip that next 30 to 60 days. And that's normal because you've been training them and setting up for success. It takes a little bit of dip and then you see the roller coaster start going up. Okay. Yeah. And so that's absolutely normal if you do the right thing in terms of setting them up for success. And then you want to be really clear on how they win. And so we follow something called a 30, 60, 90, okay? The 30, 60, 90 sets them up for goals. Here are what's expected of you in the first 30 days. Here's what's expected in 60 days. Here's what's expected in 90 days. That allows them also not to get overwhelmed with the full job. So in the beginning, what are the most important things that they need to do in the first 30 days? Right? And then, okay, how do you add on to that the next 60 days? How do you add on to that the next 30 days, right? So 30, 60, 90. And so what are the top three things they need to succeed at in their first 30 days? That question, okay, so I'm going to say it again. What are the top three things they need to succeed at in their first 30 days? That question actually has allowed for me to be less nervous when I'm making a hire. Okay. I remember hiring our chief growth officer. It was the largest hire I ever made. I was scared to death of the salary. And I remember listening to our brother podcast, Think Like a CEO. And on that podcast, Gary and Jay talk about how a lot of people don't make hires because they think of the entire salary. And they said, don't do that. Think of the first 90 days of salary because they will impact your business in those 90 days. So now I ask myself, okay, how will I know if they've impacted my business in the first 30 days? And then if they hit those things, then I'm not nervous about paying them, right? And so that question will actually help you take action. And so it's a great question to make sure they know how they're going to succeed. It's also a great question to help yourself with your nerves when you make that hire.
Well, and just to get clarity, I ask that question a lot to people. And I say to them, well, what does this person have to nail in their first month in order for you to feel like they're winning with you? Because I think a lot of times as rainmakers, as leaders, we expect them to learn everything all in that first month. And then we have disappointment because A, we probably haven't spent time training the amount of time we need to train them because we're already drowning. It's very normal. We're already drowning. That's why we're hiring someone. The hiring process has taken a lot of time. So we're like, whoo, finally, I hired someone. I get to dump all this stuff on them and I get to do what I'm good at again. And the reality of that is that's just not true. And so a lot of people feel disappointment in the first month, in the second month, and even in the third month. And that can lead to you wanting to dehire them or you having, you know, sort of unmet expectations. And so if you can really get clarity with yourself, like if they can do, if they can just nail these three things, then I'm going to feel great about this hire.
Yep. Love that. Okay. And last in making your first hire is you need to think long-term about hiring again and again, because you are going to hire a rockstar assistant who frees you up to do more business. And then you're going to need to hire another assistant or a salesperson. And so add hiring to your goals. So set a weekly goal for yourself for talking to talent or moving people into your world or into your pipeline. I mean, it's easy when you're actively making a hire because you must. But maintaining that discipline and habit is what takes your business to the next level after you've hired this amazing assistant and they are crushing it in their first 90 days. And also always thinking about, like, who are you talking to that you would love to have in your world? I know this year we had two people come into our world who I have talked to for about 5 years. Not put them through the hiring process, but I basically said, hey, I'd love to be in business with you. Like, what's your goals? And they just showed up when I needed them saying, I'm ready. Let's do this. And then I took them through the process and all of that. But that was because of that consistent conversations I was having, identifying the people in my world that I would love, that I enjoy, that I think would be awesome at something in our world, and just being intentional with my calendar on having conversations with that. So, you know, talk to one person every week you'd love to have on your team. It could be a co-op agent, could be one of your clients that you loved working with, could be your neighbor, you know, like who's that person and who can I talk to this week just to get to know them more about their goals.
Well, and we have a little, like actually Jay and I have a shared note with all of our, like, kind of our talent note. We just add anytime we've got someone or anytime we talk to someone, we just put their name on that note so that when, you know, there's a gap in one of our worlds, we just pull that up and we look at it and we're like, oh, these are people we've talked to, we've known.
I love that.
So you're already sort of pre-identifying them and,
you're dropping the gold today, Wendy.
That's good. That's really good.
So much gold from you today. You too.
Yeah, I got the gold. Well, and I know that the my world was the biggest when I had a goal of meeting with two people every week.
Yep.
Which is a huge goal. And at the end of the year, you have talked to 100 people. 100.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, today was awesome. First of all, to all of our listeners, you guys got to do this. If you've been waiting to pull the trigger on your first hire, it's time. It is literally time. It's a very scary kind of move. And once you get a taste for help, there is no going back.
Yes.
Listen to this episode over and over again today. We went over the 9 steps to making a great first hire. First one is to know yourself. Second one, create a not-to-do list. So smart. I love that. 3, sometimes help starts at home. 4, your first hire is always administrative or operational. 5, just know what to look for. Are they a values match? That was so smart, Sarah. Are they someone that's going to, you know, that you like, right? Follow a hiring process. Okay, a hiring process isn't sitting down with someone for 30 minutes that you just met and then hiring them because you're in so much pain. That's not a process, okay? That's not a process. You want to have how many final candidates?
At least two. 3
is better. Okay. Set them up for success. Like Sarah said, this is absolutely the most important thing. Okay. Don't employ what they call seagull management, which is you swoop in, dump all over your assistant, and then swoop out. Okay. Nobody wants to be led that way. And then in order to have the long-term thinking, because once you get that first taste of help, you need to add hiring to your goals. So guys, this is absolutely the first step towards growing your big business and, you know, sort of getting out of all the things that you don't want to do so that you can go on and work on your bigger life. So, bye guys.
Bye.
Have a great week.
Bye.